This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Figgy, let's hit him big time.
Houston. Let's get in the loop.
Y'all have great pulse of the city, and I really love listening to your show.
With John Lopez and Landry Locker, you're in the loop on Houston's Sports Leader.
All right, we got a blockbuster.
Sports Radio 610.
Offsides.
We got a blockbuster trade right out of the chute. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and 12-year NFL veteran Wade Smith in for Landry Locker for the next couple of days. Man, couldn't think of a better time to get you in here, Wade. Let's start right there. Let's not bury the lead. Blockbuster trade yesterday, Julio Jones to the Titans, second round pick. We'll start with the takeaways. I want to tell you what my thoughts were, just like immediate, like in the moment.
Yeah.
Because I'm not so sure that you agree with this, but I think they immediately become a threat in the AFC with the Kansas City Chiefs.
I completely agree with that.
You do?
I think for sure they are the head and shoulders favorite in the AFC South, and then they put themselves in the conversation of competing with the big dogs in the AFC, like Buffalo, like Kansas City, like the Baltimore Ravens. Like, Tennessee has been with those teams anyway. They've been competing against those teams over the last couple of years anyway, as is. When you add a guy like Julio Jones to the mix of what you have with that run game, with the offensive line, with A.J. Brown still in the fold, you got to put them right there in contention for winning the AFC championship. And so it sucks to say that. It sucks to acknowledge that, because it's the Titans. And I don't know about you, but I don't like the Titans.
I mean,
I really like Julio Jones, though, and I'm glad that he's in a situation that he's going to have an opportunity to actually play for something, since the last time he played for something, it was here in Houston.
Yeah.
And they blew a Super Bowl. Because they kept throwing the ball for whatever reason. Shout out to Kyle Shanahan. But I will say this, that, that is a scary-ass offense, man. When you look at what he brings to the table on the outside, paired with A.J. Brown, starts up front with the offensive line and Derrick Henry in that run game, teams are not going to be able to load the box against the Tennessee Titans. And in years past, they loaded the box and it didn't matter.
Yeah.
They still were running up and down the field on them. But now you got a guy like Julio Jones that's going to make you pay. And you can't double A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. So they have the most physically intimidating offense in the NFL now. And it sucks because they're in the same division as the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I've kind of evolved over the years. Like, all the teams that I used to hate, I would just hate and want nothing but horrible things to happen to them. But now I'm more of a respect the player, more than dislike the team, and I love what they're doing right there. This was Ian Rapoport with the details of the trade, and I want to get into that with you, because obviously there's a local angle with the Texans, but you just touched on something that I was going to do later, but I'm gonna do it as well, like how you match up with them. But this is Ian Rapoport.
The long rumored deal for Julio Jones finally happened at about noon or a little bit before on Sunday. And this is a situation, Kay, where really, since probably 3 or 4 days before the draft, it became clear to the teams involved that at the very least, the Atlanta Falcons were willing to consider dealing Julio Jones. And when they did not deal him before the draft, then it was just a matter of, when is the actual deadline? When are they willing to do it? They wanted to be patient to make sure they got as close to a first rounder as possible. And of course, the mandatory minicamp for the Atlanta Falcons is this week. This was a pseudo deadline for the Falcons to say, you know what, Let's wrap up this issue. Julio Jones had requested a trade. They wanted to be as good as possible, as human as possible, to one of their franchise icons. In the end, it was a second rounder and a 2023 fourth rounder to the Falcons for a sixth rounder in 2023, an all-pro receiver, Julio Jones, a new team, and a massive, massive weapon for the Tennessee Titans.
All right, a lot there, but I don't really look too much at the fourth rounder and the sixth rounder. This was Julio Jones for a second-round pick. Let's start right there as it pertains to – we all got to talk about the D-Hop trade and how bad that was. This guy's 31.
Yeah.
D-Hop was 20 – he's 32. I think he might have just turned 32. But anyway, and D-Hop was obviously 27 – and he has a huge hit on his contract, $15.3 million. Just your thoughts as it pertains to what we always talk about here with Easterby and B.O.B.
Well, when you look at it from the perspective of the Atlanta Falcons, they had to move him. They had to get rid of him because contractually what they were paying him and the fact that they didn't have any money on their salary cap, they had an internal deadline. They had to get him out of the building. And so, of course, Tennessee Titans took advantage of that and got him for a second-round draft pick. Now, the Houston Texans didn't have that same deadline, you know. DeAndre Hopkins was under a very favorable contract with the Houston Texans at the time, and there was rumblings that he was going to hold out. But at that time, that was right before COVID. There was no reason for them to panic and make a trade of DeAndre Hopkins for what they got for him. It was just it was bad all the way through. And so, you know, people will say, "Hey, well, they got a second round pick for Julio Jones, and you got a second round pick for DeAndre Hopkins. It's very similar. It's not similar at all. It's based off the age of the players." The fact that Julio Jones has missed a significant amount of time with injuries over the past few years, whereas DeAndre Hopkins, he doesn't miss games. He might not be at practice, but his ass is going to be in the game, and he's going to play, and he's going to play at a very high level. It's comparing apples and oranges. Both of them got second-round picks, but at the end of the day, the Falcons had to make that move. The Texans did not have to make that move that they made for DeAndre Hopkins.
Right.
I would have loved for them to call his bluff and seeing what he would have done and seeing if he would have actually held out. I have a hard time believing he would have.
Mm-hmm.
But just the fact that afterwards DeAndre Hopkins comes out and says, you know, I knew if I asked for that they would trade me away, just because he knew how they operated up in front office at that time. It's like, man, that in itself is a problem. But you know good and well that if DeAndre Hopkins would have had to have held out, he would have been looked at as the ultimate bad guy, because this is right when COVID hit. You know, you don't make rash moves when there's so much unknown. And at that time, there was a lot of unknown. Bill O'Brien makes that trade, and now we're still paying for it. But we got Ross Blacklock and we got David Johnson.
Yeah, we did.
So take that for what you make.
I agree with you, because Stephon Diggs went for a first-round pick. And I think the biggest difference here, a lot of people talking about, well, the age thing and some of this, I think it was all about leverage. Every team in the NFL had leverage on the Falcons.
Yeah.
They knew they had to trade him so they could, quote-unquote, lowball the Falcons. No one really hopped on. And the second-round pick, which is a better deal than Hopkins, was them lowballing the Texans.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, D-Hop, like I said, Diggs that same year, that same week, whatever, you got a first-rounder for him.
Yeah, you get a first-round draft pick for Stephon Diggs, and he helped the Buffalo Bills tremendously. And I see on Twitter people talking about, well, if you trade a first rounder for a receiver, it doesn't pay off to be in a Super Bowl. For one, I could have sworn Randy Moss got traded what's the dang team?
Well, which one?
Traded to England, but before that he got traded to Raiders and he just didn't show up. But you hold that against him. But he gets traded to New England and that team went like 16-0,
and then
18-0, and then they lose in the Super Bowl. It's a funny way of looking at things, but look, what Stephon Diggs did for Buffalo Bills and what he did for Josh Allen, he turned Josh Allen from a quarterback that people were like, I don't know about this guy, to in the MVP conversation. That was because they brought in Stephon Diggs. A wide receiver can definitely change the trajectory of what you do as an offense and how potent you are. And so it happened with Buffalo, and I think it's going to happen with the Tennessee Titans. And the Tennessee Titans already were good offensively. They were damn good offensively, one of the best offenses in the league. And now you add Julio Jones to the mix, they're scary. I think defensive backs are going to line up and be afraid when they play against them. And that's significant, because they're already afraid about when you're lining up and having to stop Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Now all the three key guys that are skilled players for the Tennessee Titans are all physically imposing threats. And so that causes people to play on their heels, and that allows the offense to dictate. And so that's what you're going to see from the Titans this year offensively.
You said that before the show, that this might be the most physically imposing threesome, which, by the way, I'm not sure why people aren't including Ryan Tannehill after the year he had last year, but we'll get to that later. Physically imposing, you can't get bigger than Derrick Henry. A.J. Brown, I've always compared him to Andre Johnson, to be honest. Yeah. I think he's got that kind of physicality. And what Julio Jones does is, who was it? I think it was Pat McAfee on his podcast. I was listening to it yesterday. He says, you always want to get the guy that's the outside of this guy. And by that he meant, when everybody says, who's the best receiver in the NFL?
Yeah.
Well, outside of Julio Jones, it's blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
He's the outside of that guy. I don't think people fully appreciate, like, just his skill set. I mean, just what he is as a receiver.
You're talking about A.J. Brown, or you're talking
about Julio Jones? Okay, yeah. About Julio Jones.
Well, Julio Jones is Andre Johnson. Like, it was Andre Johnson, and then Julio Jones came along. It's like, oh, that's their – and they run the same offense, and he's going to be running the same offense going to Tennessee, leaving from Atlanta. It's the same Gary Kubiak, Kyle Shanahan, Arthur Smith, that same offense, and you can replace one guy for another, but they're running the same scheme. They're going to do a lot of play action. He's going to have a lot of times when he's running wide open down the field because people are going to have to stop Derrick Henry. And when he's such a physically imposing mismatch when you get into the red zone, when you throw 50-50 balls, the biggest thing with Julio is, and really the only thing with Julio is he going to have any hamstring injuries? He's going to have any soft tissue injuries to keep him out for any significant amount of time? Because if you get 12 to 14 games out of Julio Jones, that's a problem for the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, if you can get that many games out of Julio, he's going to dominate in this offense because, like I said, they're going to be able to run the ball against anybody when they want to run the ball against anybody. And then he's not going to get double teamed because if he does, then A.J. Brown goes off. And if they double team A.J. Brown, then Julio's going to go off.
Exactly.
It's going to be very difficult to slow down. And you mentioned Ryan Tannehill. We'll get into him later. But he's shown me that if you put Ryan Tannehill, is Ryan, I'm going to ask you, is Ryan Tannehill a better quarterback than Matt Schaub?
Yes.
Because
I never would have said that a few years ago.
and maybe people would debate that, but Ryan Tannehill, if Matt Schaub was able to do what he was able to do within this same offense, why are you not as
high on
Ryan Tannehill, a guy that can actually is mobile within the offense? So it's a scary offense to look at. It's going to be fun to watch just from being a fan of the NFL, but once again, I don't like the Titans.
And yeah.
So it's going to suck to see them be so successful.
It's a blockbuster deal, like we said. Like you said, it's going to be fun to watch. I want to know what it's like to, you know, what it's going to mean to other teams that are going to be playing against them. And you touched on something else, how teams are going to match up against them. I got some stats here, some numbers. What the Titans did, specifically Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown, against the six-man box, against the seven-man box, and against an eight-man box. And, of course, we haven't forgotten – the Astros as well, take two out of three in Buffalo against the Blue Jays. So we're gonna have those numbers for you, and Wade Smith is gonna break down exactly what the matchup is and what other AFC teams are gonna do against this team next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room, to candid interviews with basketball legends, to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
I'm going to sell you on some things right here. Listen to me closely. You have 10 of you. Mr. Finger Roll himself, every time, every heel. Listen, he does what he needs to be done. Like, he's a leader. He's a great passer. He's it. Anyway, next. Him, behind me, superhuman. We don't even have to discuss him. He speaks for himself. Look how mean he look in the picture. Like, okay. Then me, I'm up and coming. Pro Bowl, year two. Not a big deal. Kind of a big deal, but not really. Okay, scratch that. Anyway, whatever. You, the GOAT of our era, of our receivers. Help me help you. Come home, Julio. Come home.
All right, that wasn't exactly the best pitch I've ever heard. I don't think anybody's ever heard, but that was A.J. Brown.
It worked. Yeah, whatever
works.
I guess the front office listened to him, and they made the deal.
It worked, but did they really? I don't know if they really did or not, or if he already had some insight.
That's cute, yeah, A.J.
But if he had some
Let us handle this, man. We're going to get this done.
Yeah, A.J.'s going to be taking some bows. Actually, he tweeted afterward, y'all done bleeped up, and that's what I wanted to ask you about. So I stumbled across this, Sports Radio 610, John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and Wade Smith in for Lock Dog, who's out till Wednesday. But, all right, so, you know, he just talked about it there, you know, all the greatness. Me, big deal, Pro Bowl, maybe, maybe not, whatever. And you called him, like, the most physically imposing, intimidating, whatever, you know, however you want to put it, Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, A.J. Brown. So against a six man, let's get X's and O's with Wade Smith here, because this is right in your wheelhouse, man. All right, so you're lining up for the Tennessee Titans. I know that jersey might give you a rash, but let's say you're lining up.
No question. I just started itching.
That's right. You're lining up in that Tennessee Titans jersey. You got Derrick Henry behind you. Yeah, you look to your left and you see Julio Jones. You look to your right, you see A.J. Brown. And by the way, Josh Reynolds is a big beneficiary of this.
Yeah.
As a number three, he's a good fit. We'll see about tight end. All right, but you look at those three guys. Against a six-man box last year, which you don't want to run a six-man box against Derrick Henry. He averaged 5.3 yards a rush over the last 2 years, actually, against a seven-man box. And for those who don't know, that's guys up within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage, 2.5, something like that.
Yeah, within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So basically your linebackers and your defensive line.
They're up because you got a badass running the ball.
Right.
I mean because you don't have a badass running the ball. You want them to throw the ball, basically.
Correct.
I mean, you want them to run the ball.
You want them to run the ball.
I got that backwards. Okay, so seven-man box, kind of a tweener there. Okay, over the last 3 years, A.J. Brown has 2 years. A.J. Brown is averaging 4.3 receiving yards per route against a seven-man box. Not exactly, you know, over the charts. Against an eight-man box, which Derrick Henry faced a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Julio Jones has 634 catches, which is 163 more than anyone else, averaging 4.7 yards per route against eight-man fronts. And is by far the best of any wide receiver with 100-plus of those routes run. So, what do you do? I mean, what do you do with those three guys as a defense?
Well, for one thing, some of those numbers, they kind of dispel the myth that, oh, there's only one ball to go around, so how is Julio Jones going to actually get his touches? Like, he does big numbers against the eight-man boxes. I'll relate it back to the Houston Texans back in, you know, 2010, 11, 12, back then, those times. It was the same offense that they run in Tennessee now, the same offense that they ran in Atlanta over the past few years, ever since Shanahan got there about 5-6 years ago. In that offense, you're killing them with mid to deep routes because teams are trying to line up and stop the run, because you have to stop the run against those type of offense, the outside zone scheme, or you're just going to have a long day at the office. You're going to have games like 2010 against the Indianapolis Colts, where, you know, an undrafted running back goes for 231 yards and just takes the game over. So that's when Julio does those big numbers, because he's getting single coverage, because the box is full of people trying to stop the running game. So if you're trying to stop that, honestly, there is no right way to do it. You're going to have to be very selective and have great timing of when you load the box, when you're going to have to disguise, you're going to have to show them eight-man box and then bail into cover two. You're going to have to show them cover two and then drop a guy in late to try to trick them. But you're not going to just line up and stop them if they're at full strength, because we've seen it over the past few years with Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Six-man box, seven-man box, eight-man box, I don't care what you put out there, he's going to run the ball successfully. I can name on maybe a couple of games, a couple of instances where he really got slowed down over the past few years. And a lot of times it was because Tennessee Titans gave up on the run game. Maybe they got behind early in the game and they said, we can't stick with it. But all things being equal, you're not going to be able to line up and stop them. You're not going to put seven men in a box and say, all right, we're going to shut down Derrick Henry and we'll be able to double Julio Jones. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to disguise him. You're going to have to trick him. You're going to have to send some run blitzes, and you're going to have some movement up front so that you can get tackles for losses and get them off the schedule. That is the way that you can slow them down. But when you do that, when you try to run games and when you try to blitz teams and all that type of stuff, you open yourself up for huge plays, explosive plays by the offense. And so when Derrick Henry is gashing you for 30-yard runs and Julio Jones is going over the top and A.J. Brown is going over the top, it's going to be very tough to deal with. Teams are going to, I think they're going to try to bend but don't break and hope that they make mistakes. And that's something you really haven't seen that much out of Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback, and you haven't really seen them fumble the ball as in a running game. So, like I said, they're going to be very, very, very difficult to stop. You're going to have a front four of a defensive line that can get after the quarterback and stop the run. And there's not many defensive lines like that in the NFL. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they can do that. They can just get after you. They can put seven in a box and say, we can stop the run, and we're going to get to the quarterback.
And double.
And double because their front seven is the best front seven in the NFL. But every other team, they really can't say that.
It's fascinating to me because I'm thinking down and distance, obviously, and you alluded to that, is going to make a huge difference. But first down, you get the ball, goes to the end zone, you're on the 25-yard line, first and 10. I still think I got to stop Derrick Henry first. But Derrick Henry is the priority, right? You want to get him to longer distance. You want to get, you know, second and 9, second and 8. But then throwing on first down, and this is where a smart quarterback comes in handy, and that's where Ryan Tannehill is at his best, where if you run a play action on first down, they might be doing a lot of that this year.
Yeah, I would expect them to. They're going to switch it up. I look at the Tennessee Titan offense like this. A lot of times they know teams are going to try to come in and take out Derrick Henry. And they might just run him up there a couple of times with a load of box just to get that team happy about what they're doing.
Yeah.
But the ball going over the top is going to happen. Mm-hmm. That is something that's going to happen when you're playing against the Tennessee Titans and you got A.J. Brown and you got Julio Jones out there. You mentioned Josh Reynolds in the slot. Like, if they line up in 11 personnel, which is one running back, one tight end, and you got those three guys at the receiver position that can all do work, if a team tries to match up with them and go nickel, and they take a linebacker out and put a defensive back in, you can run the ball all day against
all day.
That is the perfect matchup for an outside zone scheme and a running back like Derrick Henry, because you have an outside zone scheme that got teams that they're making them run, but then you got somebody that's a battering ram just hitting them in the mouth coming downhill. That's a bad combination to deal with. So you're going to put the defense in a bind all season long. The thing that's going to slow down the Tennessee Titans is injury, and the other thing that's going to slow them down is injury. Besides that, that's it. I'm just being honest.
No,
I agree, man.
All the way around.
People will say, well, Julio Jones, he's old. And da-da. When he's on the field, he balls.
Yeah.
So the only thing you got to hope for, you got to pray for, is that he gets injured.
Yeah.
That's because I've seen that offense work consistently, and that's why there's so many teams running that same offense throughout the league.
Yeah.
And when you have the right pieces within that offense, you're going to be successful. You're going to be dominant at times. And when you have the offensive line that the Tennessee Titans have is damn good, and it's been damn good for the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
You got Derrick Henry as your running back. He's been the most productive running back in the NFL. Derrick Henry's going to run for another 2,000 yards this year.
I think he's got 2 years left. You know, the history tells you that, and it happened to Arian. It happened, you go back as far as you want. It happened to Dickerson. It happened to all the great running backs. They have about a 4 to 5 year window where they are on top of their game. He's had 3 years, you know, of this kind of production. I think he's got two more years. So this whole trade actually helps him, because he might get 1,600 yards rushing, but have a better year than the 2,000 from scrimmage he got last year.
I mean, I just look at him, and he could have more rushing yards this year than last, because last year you had Corey Davis on the opposite side of A.J. Brown. So you could fill up the box with eight.
Yeah.
You could Corey Davis was not a guy that you said he warrants a double team, mm-hmm. like ever. Julio Jones and AJ Brown are two guys that both warrant double teams throughout the year, so throughout the game. So you're going to give some favorable situations to run the ball for Derrick Henry. And like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. And people will say, well, you're just showing too much love for the time. I'm a realist.
No.
100. That is a dangerous ass team that you're having to play against. And there's no right way to stop them. There's no, like I said, you're hoping for injuries, because without you're hoping that Ryan Tannehill falls off. And you talked about Derrick Henry, him falling off after a couple of years. The one thing that's different between him and a lot of those other running backs you named mm-hmm. is he's bigger. He's a physical specimen, and he runs in a manner that he might not fall off in 2 years. Yeah. It might be.
I'm just saying, history says.
Right. That's what
they've got. Right. But their window is 2 years for sure.
Yeah. But that's the thing. He is an anomaly when you're just talking about his physical makeup.
Yeah.
And so his run might be longer than some of the other guys that you mentioned. And those are some of the best running backs to ever do it.
Yeah. Man, what a great day to have Wade in, because there's a lot more to cover with Julio, but we do got to get to the Astros, and we're going to do that. Because I thought there was something that happened in that game that was actually more impressive than anything we've seen this year. That's next.
We're making the stories from outside the loop matter to you. This is Localize It, presented by Westside Lexus. You're in the loop on Houston's sports leader.
So what are the Colts doing
Sports Radio 610.
Offsides again, man.
That's twice.
False start.
Like Laramie Tunsil over here.
2 years ago. 2 years ago. Not last year. He corrected it last year.
What do the Colts do now? What does the AFC do now? Back. Yeah, he did. From me, mostly. We'll get to that.
Remember what that popped off?
That popped off pretty good. Yeah. I stood my ground against Wade Smith, and not too many people can say that.
You did good, man.
Wade Smith.
I mean, he still lost.
In for, well, I don't know. Wade Smith in for Landry Locker. We'll get into that in a minute. But the Astros yesterday, 6-3 over the Blue Jays in Buffalo. A couple of little things that just stood out to me that we're going to talk about, and then something big that stood out to me. Leadoff home run from Altuve.
Yep.
9-0 in games in which Altuve's hit a home run. I felt bad for Yordan, man. He didn't get the best jump on a fly ball to left field. It was kind of no harm, no foul. It was a good hard hit ball. I think 80% of the left fielders probably catch that ball. But it's his second game. And my bigger takeaway, the reason I felt bad for him, is because he's, first of all, healthy.
Right.
He's been running the bases like crazy. This is the second time that he's played the outfield. This was a road game that he played left field, not a home game, which obviously, you know, Dusty Baker was saying he wanted to kind of limit it to home. It's a shorter, smaller left field. I think he's doing fine. That was just one of those, you know what? You haven't played left field very much. It's a new spot. The ball was hard hit. Kind of hard to keep up with that.
Yeah, listen, when you got a guy that functions so well at the plate, you can get over some of the issues or mistakes that he might make in the field, because he's going to make up with it for it on the plate. At the plate and on the base pass, like on the single by Kyle Tucker that he scored on, it was a bloop single. He had to hold to see if he could actually go, and he kind of scored with ease. Like, he's moving around those base pass. So he's like, all right, if every now and again he's a little awkward here and there, you can live with that because you know what he's going to do with his bat. A guy like Miles Straw, like, hey,
dude,
you can't be that athletic and that physically talented and then not get good jumps on balls and not be able to be not just solid, but you got to be a damn good defender if you're not going to do anything at the plate. And so I'm just wondering, when is Miles Straw going to get back to being just the pinch runner and the utility guy that comes in and spells guys when they need relief? Could you not function as an outfield with Alvarez and Tucker and McCormick and Michael Brantley? Like, could you not function with those four guys getting the majority of the starts, and then every now and again you throw Miles Straw in there? You wanted him to be successful, you wanted him to do good, you saw the physical traits, and you got excited about him. Hey, he's going to move up and step into that role, but he hasn't done it. So I'd much rather live with Yordan Alvarez making a mistake here or there.
Me too.
And then doing what he does at the plate and running the bases like he's running, as opposed to Miles Straw being out there and you get nothing from the plate and then you're being extremely disappointed because he's not handling business in the outfield.
Miles Straw's that guy in every sport. Even when you're in high school, you had that guy, that 6'6" dude that was athletic, and you're like, man, we got to get him out on the basketball court.
Right.
And then he gets out on the basketball court and he doesn't know what's what. Or the player that's a bench player for the Texans, all right, that just looks the part, you know, has a great training camp, you know, has every skill. Man, this guy's got to get on the starting lineup. And then when he is in the starting lineup, you're like, ooh, now I know why he was a bench player. That's Miles Straw. With Alvarez, this is an old saying, and I'm not exactly sure who said it. It might have even been Roberto Clemente, like that old. Like okay. my mom's all-time favorite player, Roberto Clemente. RIP to them both. But someone asked Roberto Clemente, what's the secret to playing a great right field?
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the greatest right fielders, best arm, best defense, best everything. Someone asked him, what's the secret to playing a great right field? And he said, swing that bat.
It's the same, it's the same thing you're talking about with the Tennessee Titans and the fact that they got Derrick Henry, their best defense is going to be the run game.
Yeah,
it's the same thing in baseball. It goes from different sports. Hey, if you're putting up 45 points on offense, you might not have to be the best defender.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because you're gonna handle the business on the other side. I just look at Yordan as a guy that he's going to consistently do what he does at the plate, and you know that's going to be there. And he's going to get better as an outfielder because he just got to get the reps. He's been on the shelf as far as being a positional player because he's had injuries over the years, and they're just trying to keep him healthy enough so he can keep swinging that bat. The more reps he gets out in the outfield, I think he'll naturally become a better position player, and that in turn will make the Astros just a better overall team.
Yeah, the secret to him playing a great left field is to swing that bat. Now, there was something yesterday. I'm watching this game, and Luis Garcia, who In the Loop has adopted a long time ago, he's in the Loop of Trust. Shout out to Sean Pendergast.
Wait, the Loop of Trust?
In the Loop of Trust.
In the Loop? What did I miss? What's going on here?
That
sounds like some copyright infringement.
Big deal. Okay.
It is. We stole. See, we like Luis Garcia when he was winless. I just liked him. I talked about it in this show. Like, this kid's got something. And so we were like scouts. I mean, we were like, there's something there. Just give him a chance. He was a hard luck pitcher, you know, got knocked out in the fourth inning a couple times. And so now that he's hot and putting up some great numbers, I say he's in the Loop of Trust. And Sean Pendergast didn't necessarily like that too much. But
all right, whatever, dude.
He didn't. But we're gonna stick with it. But this was Dusty Baker on Luis Garcia. I'm gonna tell you why it was the most impressive performance he had.
He didn't have his best stuff, and. You know, he was sick. You know, you saw him coughing on the mound. That's one reason why we, we took him out earlier than last time. And plus, he had 106 pitches longer than he's ever gone. Like I said, he wasn't as sharp as he was, but, you know, he made the pitches when he had to.
He did. And to me, that was impressive. 3 hits, 2 walks, struck out 8, 56 strikes, 16 of them were swinging. To me, and I know you can relate to this, it translates to every sport. When a guy is not at his best, is not healthy, has the flu, has whatever, sore ankle, sore shoulder, whatever, and still gets it done out there, to me, that was maybe his most impressive performance.
Yeah, can you figure out a way to get the job done? At the end of the day, any ailments, any injuries, any sickness, whatever it may be, this any adversity is striking you, can you overcome adversity and get it done when it matters the most? And that's what he showed yesterday, you know, in that outing up in Buffalo against the Blue Jays. Like, you have to understand that you're not going to always have your best stuff, but can you figure out a way to get it done?
Yeah.
And that's what Garcia did, and it was good to see. It'll be interesting to see what ends up shaking out with the starting rotation, because you got 6 guys that legitimately say, for whatever reasons, because of performance or because of what you paid them, that they feel like they should be starters. But, you know, Odorizzi, he had that one start, but I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, he's on the outs for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, all right, what you paid him and what what he's here for, you would expect him to be a starter, but his performance has not been better than the other 5 guys that are in the conversation. So, interested to see how that'll shake out. But Luis Garcia, it was a very impressive outing, And it's going to bode well for the Astros going forward, because you know the bullpen is still kind of shaky. You know, Stanton kind of struggled a little bit the other day, yesterday. You're still trying to figure out a way to bolster that, but at the same time, your starting pitching is doing so well over the past couple of weeks. It's kept you in ball games, or one just straight out won ball games for you, and that's what you're going to need to eventually take over the AFC, the American League West, and then also try to go in a run to try to win a World Series.
See, I think that's the answer. I never have been an advocate of 6-man rotations. It's just too much. The whole front end, high end starting pitchers, they get their routine messed up with six people in the rotation. I think it's hard to pull off five. I'm good with, because of the off days and games in a row that you can put them in there. I think that's your answer. You can move one of those guys to the bullpen and figure it out that way. All right. So while we're on the topic of defending In the Loop's honor with Sean Pendergast, you put something on the doc that I thought was really, really interesting. You said it was a weird take from Landry and Lopez that I brought this stat up. The NFL starting quarterback record of Tyrod Taylor was 25-21-1, and I kind of went, eh. But my point was this, because I literally said these words, and Figgy can back me up. He's an average to slightly above average starting quarterback. And so I don't mean 25-21-1 as I don't want this guy. I don't need this guy. All I'm saying is, with one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and a slightly better roster than you have right now, you were 4-12. And so that's my point with Tyrod Taylor, is he's okay. All due respect. I mean, I really respect, you know, the way he's always responded from being benched and being injured and having guys drafted behind him and all that. It's hard not to. But for me, Tyrod Taylor, he's really just a place setting right now.
He's the definition of a bridge quarterback. And don't get me wrong, I thought the take was bad, because
like
it came
stinks.
Across. If you're a starting quarterback in the league and you're 25-21-1 over however many years where he was the starter, that's going to be better than half of the quarterbacks that are in the league. Mm-hmm. That puts you as an above average quarterback. That just, you know, most quarterbacks are either really damn good or they're not very good, and they're eventually not a starter. But, you know, that record in itself, I thought was a respectable record.
Yeah.
But for what Tyrod Taylor is going to give you and what the expectations are on the team, it makes absolute perfect sense that he is going to be the starter this entire year, and he's really the right guy for this particular job. He is the epitome of a bridge quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's going to get you to the next guy. Who the next guy is it Davis Mills? Who the hell knows? I think it's kind of weird to put a lot of expectations
on him. We'll get to Davis Mills.
Because he's way too, you know, there's so much things that are working against him for you to be so high or have expectations that are so high on him at such an early time. But he, you know, Tyrod Taylor is going to be a guy that steps in the huddle, and the guys in the huddle are going to believe he's going to give us a chance to win. Now, is he going to be the guy that's going to go out there and win games for you?
Yeah.
No, but he's going to keep you in every game, and he's going to give you a chance to win. He's going to do his job, and he's going to expect everybody else around him to do their job. And when you step into the huddle, if you're a left guard, if you're the receiver, if you're a running back, whoever it might be that's in a huddle, you want the quarterback to have that presence and have that ability for you to believe in him, that he's going to help you get the job done. And so that's what he's bringing to the table. Now, is that going to translate to 8 wins and 9 wins for the Texans? No, I don't see that at all. Like, but at the same time, you know, when you talk about walking in the huddle as somebody that's a veteran on this team, and not a veteran in the NFL, but not a veteran on this team, because there's not many veterans that are coming back.
Yeah.
But you want to know that you got a guy in the huddle that has been through the wars, that knows what he's doing, is not going to lose the game for you. And that's exactly what Tyrod Taylor is. And he's going to make a few plays with his feet. And so that's going to be what you need for somebody that you're trying to buy into and follow behind to try to go out there and win as many games as possible.
You also said that Tyrod Taylor is going to be starting every game this year, barring injury.
Yeah.
I want to believe you, and I want to believe that to be true. I'm just not so sure. I mean, the way that they're pumping a third round pick with all these skills, and we've heard, you know, all the raves of, do you think he's going to be the starting quarterback? Do you think there's like barring injury, health, he'll be there all 17 games?
Listen, Tyrod Taylor is not going to get benched for performance reason. It's not going to happen. I've seen him play, and when he had opportunity to play, he does not turn the ball over. He might get you a touchdown or two a game, and he's not going to turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. He's going to keep you in every ball game. And so as a coach, that's what you want out of your quarterback if you don't have the guy. If you don't have the guy that's going to go win you a game, you want a guy that's not going to lose you the game, yeah. right? And so he's not going to get benched for performance issues. He's not going to go out there and screw the pooch. He's not going to wet the bed.
I agree with that.
He's never been that guy.
But there's politics. I mean, you know this more than anyone because you were in that locker room and those buildings across the NFL. This is the most political organization of sports I've ever been around.
And I understand that politics do play a part into decision making. But Davis Mills is not a guy that strikes me as somebody that, you know, you need to politic for, I got to push him through. Mm-hmm. To me, that would be doing Davis Mills a disservice.
Yeah.
I think Davis Mills needs to take his time, figure out how to be a quarterback in the NFL, figure out how to sign autographs for people and smile.
Well, we'll figure it out.
And he needs to figure out those type of things before you throw him in the fire when he doesn't have all the pieces around him that you want to be successful. Like, I understand the sentiment that people want to see Davis Mills to see what he's going to give them because, hey, if he plays well, then you don't have to necessarily draft a quarterback next year. You can have your guy. That's great, but the chances are you're going to ruin any chances of him having a successful career yeah. by throwing him out there when he doesn't have the pieces around him to be successful. So, and I am a big proponent of put guys in the best position to succeed. Every yeah. person that steps on the field, put that guy in the best position to succeed. And if you're not doing that, then I'm not going to be a fan of it. And to me, putting Davis Mills out there because Tyrod Taylor is playing bad, but mm-hmm. just because it's doing him a disservice. And Tyrod Taylor is not a guy that goes out there and plays bad.
Right.
He's not going to play spectacular, but he doesn't play bad. So I don't see him missing any games other than for injury issues. And now his history will say that he probably will miss some games yeah. for injuries. And that's when Davis Mills should get his opportunity. But just because we got to get a look at him. I remember John McClain talking about that. Hey, you got to get a look at him to see what he's going to do for next year. They worry about this year.
Yeah.
Like the guys, they brought in a lot of veteran guys on this team and guys that they're trying to figure out who can we keep with us moving forward. Those guys want the quarterback that's going to give them the best chance to win. And if Davis Mills is not that guy, and most likely he's not going to be that guy, then you don't put him in there, politics or not.
No, in a perfect world, I would totally agree with you, but I don't, because I just feel like politics is part of it. And if they don't, I'm not with John McClain that you got to find out. I think they are going to find out. I think they're going to want to put him out. Keep in mind, this is Nick Caserio's first ever draft pick, and he's going to want to look good, and there's that politics there. You know how it is with a new general manager.
Okay, so if you're the GM and you look at the pieces that are around Davis Mills.
Dude, I totally agree.
The receiving core, right? Yeah. You got Brandon Cooks, and you got a bunch of guys that you don't know what you're going to get out of.
Yeah.
Why would you throw Davis Mills into that? To that fray.
I'm not saying I
would. Is he going to come out looking good if he doesn't have the weapons to throw to? Like, I don't.
I agree with your premise.
Right.
All I'm saying is this is how the NFL. Come on, man. I'm preaching to the choir here. You know how the NFL works, general manager and the egos and everything else?
Well, okay. I understand that. But is Nick Caserio one of those guys? Is the Patriot Way one of those guys
that you throw
guys out there just to see if they work?
Let's pick that up. Let's pick that up because you mentioned Patriots Way, and Julian Edelman was really good on the Chris Long podcast. So we're going to talk about the Patriots way and if Nick Caserio might fall into that. And I still haven't talked about what the other AFC teams, I haven't asked Wade about it to be more specific, what other AFC teams, specifically the Colts, are going to do now that Julio Jones is in the division.
We're not going to really get into a lot of hypotheticals and a lot of speculation.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.